Chapter 1. I didn't usually go looking for trouble. In my line of work, trouble had a way of finding me, usually with a weapon in hand and bad intentions in its eyes. My job had been to make sure those intentions died before they reached anyone else. But that night wasn't business as usual. I wasn't waiting for trouble to find me. I was already in the dark, watching, hunting. The time, 2000 hours. The place, Ashwood, New York State. Population, 2,000 on a good day. A one-stoplight speck of a town where everybody knew everybody. Gossip moved faster than the mail truck. And nobody locked their doors because they thought evil lived somewhere else. A town that rolled its sidewalks up early and left the night to crickets and the occasional truck rumbling down Route 9 toward New York City. The kind of place that had once fed on factory whistles and shift changes, but now sat hollowed out like a dozen other dying mill towns scattered across upstate New York. Main Street ran right through the middle of the town like a spine. At 2000 hours in small-town America, the street was already a corpse. Shuttered windows, dead neon, the diner closed, the hardware store dark, pawn shop padlocked. Only the bar on the far edge of town still had a heartbeat, neon flickering. The police station sat at the other end of Main, a squat two-story brick box with a flagpole out front. In the day, five small-town cops went about maintaining law and order. At that hour, they had all clocked out. But none of that mattered to me. I wasn't watching the station or Main Street. I was buried in the shadows of a residential side street, where the houses leaned close together, porches sagged, and curtains stayed drawn. My eyes were locked on a beat-up Ford pickup, parked halfway down the block. Two men inside, silhouettes in the dull glow of their dash lights. Local muscle with city connections. Predators, but not smart ones. The kind who confuse intimidation with intelligence. They were babysitting a house, making sure the woman inside didn't move, didn't talk, didn't breathe in a way that rattled the gang's plans. The woman they were watching was Dana Kincaid, someone I hadn't even known existed until that morning. Widow of Staff Sergeant Mark Kincaid. That was a name I knew, and not in the casual way you know somebody from a roster. Mark had been the JTAC, Joint Terminal Attack Controller. The guy on the ground who called in the Reaper drone strike that erased Ryan's position in Helmand Province. The strike that ended four good Marines, including Ryan. Mark had lived with that mistake, if it was actually his mistake, until it chewed him hollow. He had left the Army, gone through the Shrink's obstacle course, and even sent me and my mom personal letters of apology. Along with the letter, he had sent a transcript of the radio call that led to the strike. It read wrong. All of it. But I always believed somebody had set him up. I just wasn't able to figure out who or why. So when Dana called me out of the blue that morning, I thought maybe the trail had finally stirred. But she wasn't calling with answers. She was calling with a gut punch. Mark was dead. A week gone. Road accident, she said, like she was just reading it off a police blotter. My gut didn't buy it. Then she told me Mark had been trying to work up the nerve to contact me before he died. Couldn't seem to make himself do it. But he had told her that if anything happened to him, she should hand me a flash drive. She had asked what was going on. He told her not to worry, which is exactly the kind of thing men say when they know damn well the worry is already inside the house. It took her 2 weeks to call me. I understood that. Grief has its own timetable. But my instincts were already tapping me on the shoulder, whispering that this smelled wrong. I told her I would come see her that same afternoon. When I arrived, Dana opened the door like she was afraid to open it all the way. Pleasant face, but the kind of pleasant that looks like it used to smile more before life started landing body blows. She was pale, jittery, eyes darting over my shoulder like she expected shadows to follow me inside.
Come in,
she said, but it didn't really sound like she wanted me to.